food sensitivity tests may or may not actually be measuring food sensitivities. And if you get a long list of reactive foods, it doesn't mean you're allergic to everything. It basically means something's going on with your gut. Finding the cause of that is most useful as far as helping you heal, because that's where the healing is going to occur. It's not usually the foods per se. It is something going on in your system. Food sensitivities are a big topic in naturopathic medicine. Today on the Ask Dr. Gill podcast, I want to go through the information about when food sensitivities are useful or not useful and what they're actually showing you. So stay tuned. Hello and welcome to Ask Dr. Gill. I am your host, Dr. Gill Winkleman. And for those of you who are new to the podcast, because I realize I'm getting new listeners, and you may be thinking, well, why is he talking about so many different topics? My focus is on the bridge between natural medicine and spirituality. And this is why there's a big breadth of topics, because I find that lots of times when I have patients, sometimes they come to me with physical ailments that are actually originating somewhere out, in a sense outside the body or outside the physical body. And, you know, as an example, people who have physical ailments as a result of unhealthy marriages or relationships, and this is something that we see in the literature, and sometimes people talk about it and sometimes they don't. And so my goal is to give a breadth of information. And each episode, I try and keep under 30 minutes because that's basically what the research shows people's attention span is for listening to a podcast. Before the pandemic, it was actually the length of my episodes was based on people's commutes, but so many people telecommute these days, or have been since the pandemic, that's probably not a good benchmark anymore. But I still try and keep it down as a topic. And if there's a topic you hear and you want me to go into more depth, let me know. You could always send me an email to info@askdrgill.com, and I look forward to hearing from you. So let's get into the food sensitivity / allergy testing, because this is actually a big topic, and it's one that possibly could be multiple episodes. Now, I want to start basically by saying the tests that we have, I am going to criticize, and we'll get into the second half of the show what might be a better approach. But the best test, if you're trying to figure out if you're, you know, sensitive to a particular food, doesn't exist, which would be to see how the immune system is responding when you eat something. Because typically when you eat something, your immune system shuts down. So there should be no immune response. And that's called the Th0. So there's a Th1, Th2, and a Th0. There's a few others. These responses, usually the immune system is geared up to fight different types of foreign invaders. Viruses, for example, and bacteria, those have different immune responses. Food should not have any immune response. So when there's an immune response to certain foods, that's a problem. And there's different reasons that that can happen, but it might not be showing you that you're sensitive to the food. Rather, it's showing that the immune system has been activated in the past because of these things. That's part of the piece about this, and I'll get into this in terms of what you can do if you're looking at terms of food sensitivities that and food intolerances. Now, true food allergies, you can test with a skin prick or a serum IgE test. These are usually the things that will cause anaphylaxis or hives, things that can be potentially deadly. And these are generally the things that you've heard of: peanuts or tree nuts, shellfish. Those are the big ones that people have. And they have this test with this, particularly with the skin prick, has a high, you know, clinical value in terms of people's responses and needs for treatment or having an EpiPen. And so I want to just talk, you know, kind of mention that, because that's not what I'm going to be talking about for the rest of the show. But if that is the case where you have hives, you're having anaphylaxis, that test can be very useful in terms of identifying what it is that you're responding to. Now, the thing about the IgE test is that is sometimes sort of expanded past the big pathogens. And sometimes it's accurate and sometimes it's not. And if you ask me why that is, I couldn't tell you. But for the big things, like I mentioned, it's very accurate. And usually when there's a serious issue, you have an inkling about this because you've had a reaction or your child has. And it can be very scary, particularly if it's happened more than once, because over time that reaction becomes faster. And so, you know, if you have a peanut allergy and you have a peanut the first time, you might feel something in your throat. And the second time, you're full-blown asthma and you need an EpiPen right away. So that happens often as well. Now, the food sensitivity tests, as opposed to the food allergy tests, those often are IgG or IgA-mediated panels. Sometimes they have both. And so oftentimes with these foods, if you have a sensitivity, you may not feel symptoms right away. There could be a delay up to 72 hours, for example. And this is a really interesting one. When I do I have a detox diet that I run patients through, and they limit the amount of food they eat. And we'll get to that in the second part of the show. But when they reintroduce foods at the end of the detox, what we have them do is do it slowly and then wait 3 days to see if they've had a reaction. And the reason is oftentimes you can eat something that you have a sensitivity to, not notice it right away. I mean, some people do. Some people describe it as like, oh, I feel like I was drugged when I had corn chips or whatever it is. But other people say, well, I noticed something 3 days later, 2 days later. And it's that delay, and we're not totally sure why it is, but oftentimes that delay happens as a result of having to work through the body slowly. So there's that test, and then there's also issues if you have high levels of IgG to all the foods on these tests. Often that can represent something else. So it's not that you're allergic to everything; it's that you're body isn't functioning properly. And this is when we talk about leaky gut. When someone has many IgG reactions, usually there's an issue in the gut barrier that, if you can see this, if you're watching on this on the video, it's like our intestinal linings are like fingers. They're called villi, and they kind of fit together like this. Well, when there's good tightness between them, you can see it's hard to get things through. So the proteins have to be broken down to get through where my fingers are, right? But if there's a lot of permeability, then you can get bigger proteins through. And that's what the body's reacting to. That's when you get the IgG response happening. And it's possible that's where the IgE food sensitivities happen with, you know, shellfish and peanut allergy as well. That mechanism is not fully understood. Like, why do some people have this and others don't? But another topic for another day. But it's interesting. So with the leaky gut, it's basically telling you your immune system is working properly. The problem is that you have too much gut permeability. And that can happen because of a microbiome imbalance. It can happen because of chronic inflammation. It can happen because it can be vagus nerve mediated. You may be in too much sympathetic overload, and that can do it as well. And if you've listened to the podcast, you've heard me talk about sympathetic and parasympathetic issues in the body. It's not the food, though, in those situations. You need to fix the gut. And that's kind of the piece about that. Now, the last kind of testing that we can do has to do with enzymes and metabolite assessments. For example, is how we test for lactose intolerance or FODMAP sensitivity, sometimes histamine intolerance, although there's other tests for histamine. But you're not using the antibodies. Those tests can be useful for different situations and different people. But the blood spot test, I'm not a huge fan of for the IgG. And it's unless you react to everything, you're not necessarily learning that you're reactive to the specific foods. That's not to say that I don't sometimes recommend it. And sometimes it's useful when I have patients who are reticent to eliminate any foods. Sometimes I'll use that to help them try to eliminate the foods, because typically if you are reacting to them, eliminating them does help you feel better. But as far as the accuracy, I don't know if I can say it's super accurate. But sometimes you just do this to help person get better. So we're going to take a quick break. And then on the second half of the show, I'm going to talk more about what you can do to sort of test your own food sensitivities. So stay tuned. Hello and welcome to Ask Dr. Gill. I'm Dr. Gill Winkleman, your host, and we've been talking about food sensitivity tests. And I just want to remind you, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to send me an email to info@askdrgill.com. And so what I want to sort of mention is that the food sensitivity tests may or may not actually be measuring food sensitivities. And if you get a long list of reactive foods, it doesn't mean you're allergic to everything. It basically means something's going on with your gut. So I just want to remind you about that. And if you do that, finding the cause of that is most useful as far as helping you heal. Because that's where the healing is going to occur. It's not usually the foods per se. It is something going on in your system. Now, having said that, I've been thinking about doing another podcast about the problem with the food sources in the United States and why many of the foods that we eat have been banned in other countries. And those do have a reaction, and we do react to those. And so, as an example, if you eat, you know, let's say salmon that's been colored with a dye, it may be the dye you're reacting to, not the salmon. And that's an important distinction. And so when we, and this is true with pesticides too, it, when we look at this, it becomes much more complicated. And this is why it's like, all right, let's fix the leaky gut. Let's get your body working better in terms of eliminating toxins. Those are the pieces that I think are useful to kind of keep in mind as far as healing goes. Now, if you have a suspicion that you're sensitive to particular foods, what can you do? Well, except for gluten. So let me talk about gluten for a minute. Eliminating gluten and then trying to test for it actually will give you a false negative a lot of the time. So if you think you're allergic to gluten or celiac, you should go ahead and test for it and not eliminate it necessarily. Now, if you think you just have gluten sensitivity, eliminating it is probably a good idea. And the difference is do you have full-blown celiac or gluten enteropathy, or do you just have a sensitivity? And so there's not a good test for the sensitivity. That's the point. But there is a good test for the full-blown celiac. It's just that oftentimes when we eliminate the gluten, the test comes back negative. And that's because it's not getting into the system. Our antibody load drops. And so it sort of goes away and then isn't measurable. Still there. If you ate the gluten, it would come back. So now, as far as the methodology is, oftentimes doing an elimination diet is one of the best ways that you can begin to see how you're responding to the different foods. And as I mentioned, the detox diet that I do, it's technically not anti-inflammatory because there's a few foods in there that are on the anti-inflammatory diet, such as tomatoes, but they work really well for most people or many people. So, but it's a very limited selection of food in this detox. It's like 20 or 25 foods that you can eat. And most people do not react to these foods. The one exception on the list for this particular diet that I use is eggs. Eggs are a pretty common allergen for a lot of people. But what I found with taking hundreds of people through this detox diet is, first of all, when they limit the calories, they all lost weight if they were trying to lose weight. They also found that they slept better. They had more energy, even on a low calorie intake. And generally, they felt better. Any aches and pains, gone within 3 weeks, completely gone. That's the sign that something in the food is affecting you. Now, as I mentioned with the leaky gut piece, it may not be specific foods. It may be that your gut lining is too permeable and it needs to be healed. And there's not a particularly good way of figuring that out from an elimination diet, except if you start introducing new foods and you're reacting to all of them. I guess that would kind of tell you that that's what's going on. So, but if you eliminate everything and then you start to, and you want to do that for 3 to 6 weeks and then start to reintroduce things slowly, you begin to see, oh, I'm good with these foods. I'm not good with these other foods. And you begin to have change your relationship with what the foods you eat are. And the other thing I would say, this just came up with a patient recently who realized that she was allergic to gelatin, which was so interesting that we figured this out because most of the vitamins she owned that she had been buying had the same type of gelatin that she was reacting to. And it was really unfortunate because we were seeing that she would sometimes have these reactions and we're like, where is this coming from? And it would be from, you know, a particular vitamin she got. Now, granted, it happened to be a cheap brand of vitamin. So that was kind of where we went with it. And I think that particular form of gelatin was more harsh on her system than others. But it was really interesting. These are the things where you will find, oh, that's why I've been having so much trouble. This is kind of, this can be a very powerful tool in terms of medicine to help you feel better, to find the foods that are irritating your system. So, and if you want to learn more about testing in general, I am offering a course. It's called Eliminate Anxiety Naturally, but it's really very in-depth. It covers, it's not just about anxiety. It covers all of the issues and the ways that I treat patients, in a sense, except for neurofeedback. It doesn't really go into that. But it goes into methylation. It explains that in great detail. It explains epigenetics. It explains testing. And we go through the vitamins and, you know, what they're useful for. So it, there's a lot of information, and I'm about to change the offering in terms of the price is going to go up, and I'm going to be offering Q&A times that I'll be offering once a month so that people can ask questions about their specific situation and I can answer them. And you'll get those recordings as well. If you can't make it, you can email me. We'll figure that out as, you know, you'll email me. And I'll answer the question, and then you can watch it later. And that's kind of the purpose of that, is to help people sort of sift through, because it is a, it's a lot of information. Not all of it will apply to everyone, but I wanted to put this out so that people understood the breadth of how complex the human system is, and the fact that you have a diagnosis, it doesn't necessarily tell you what to do about it. You know, you can say you have anxiety, but is the anxiety coming because there's stress in your life, there's stress in the world, there's a chemical imbalance? Well, if there is a chemical imbalance, what is the chemical imbalance? These are the pieces that kind of it helps you sort of sort through, and that's the purpose of it. And there's a few guided meditations on there as well, if I recall. That's what I got for you today. I hope you enjoyed the show. Let me know if you have any questions, and if you want to learn more about this course, I'll leave it in the show notes, and we'll see you soon.